And thank you very much for joining us here on Community Talk. I'm Donnie Chase, and kind of a fun thing coming up toward the end of this month. It's been going on for a while. Something I think we can all relate to pretty much. And that is Mr. Rogers and the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood Sweater Drive, which has been going on. And we want to introduce it. We'll talk about that coming up and all that it means. And everybody's been seeing a lot of Mr. Rogers on the news lately. Just last week, it was his 90th birthday, or it would have been his 90th birthday. And then the other thing about it, too, is this great new movie that's coming up. There's all kinds of Mr. Rogers stuff in the air. But we want to go to the source that always been the source for Mr. Rogers, and that is local PBS stations. I mean, what would we do without public broadcasting? They brought us Mr. Rogers. And in the studio today, we have Franz. Franz, you are the general manager of New Mexico PBS.
That's right. Thank you, Donnie. Yes.
John, I'm Franz. I'm going to mess up your name. Joachim.
Joachim.
Joachim. That is how you pronounce your last name.
That's how I pronounce it, but nobody's ever gotten it right the first time. So you are in good company.
With everybody else. Well, I'm sorry about that. Ana Dobrio, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me, Donnie.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here, too. And you're the special projects facilitator for the APS Clothing Bank.
Yes.
Which is going to benefit from the sweater and outerwear drive, as I believe it is.
Absolutely, yes.
Well, let's get in. Let's dive in and let's talk about some stuff. First of all, Franz, I know that the 50th anniversary of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood coming up.
That's correct. The 50th anniversary is pending. It's also just past his what would have been Fred Rogers' 90th birthday.
Yeah.
You know, so Mr. Rogers is on everybody's mind. We have premiered a PBS special on Mr. Rogers, which viewers can see again later this morning at 10:30 this morning. We will be replaying that special on Channel 5.1, okay. KNME Channel 5.1. So there's another opportunity to see that.
A little bit later this morning.
Later this morning, 10:30 this morning. And then there's a lot of activity around Mr. Rogers. There's a new museum that opened up in Pittsburgh not long ago devoted to Mr. Rogers. There's another documentary coming out later this summer on Mr. Rogers. There's a movie, Sony Pictures movie, starring Tom Hanks that's going to be coming out later this year, also on Mr. Rogers. So there seems to be a lot of, which I'm gratified to see, a lot of renewed interest in Mr. Rogers.
Right. I mean, I remember that, sadly, when he passed a few years ago, all of us that grew up on Mr. Rogers, and the news they would talk about is like, what's going to happen now? And what will happen to these shows? And so what was that like at PBS during that time?
Well, I was pretty young at that time, so I wasn't at PBS.
Oh, you weren't. Okay.
And in fact, I was military family. So at the age where I would have been watching Mr. Rogers, I was overseas and we didn't have access. So I'm one of those who did not grow up on Mr. Rogers. I learned to love and appreciate Mr. Rogers quite a bit later in life when I started working for a PBS station in college in Tucson, Arizona. That's where I first actually heard about Mr. Rogers, and I was lucky enough to actually get to meet Mr. Rogers.
Oh, okay, yes. I want to talk to you about that. Well, so you have a couple of personal Mr. Rogers stories.
I have a few, yeah.
A few? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Not just one.
Well, you know, 6 degrees of separation kinds of stories, but mine are 1 and 2 degrees of separation. So, when I was in college, I think it was probably a sophomore, and Mr. Rogers, this was in the late 70s, Mr. Rogers was on some kind of tour, and he came into the station. And, you know, I have to say that we make a lot of jokes about millennials, but college students really haven't changed that much, because we were all pretty sarcastic and snarky. And all day long when we're setting up and anticipating for this interview, we're all making cardigan sweater jokes and, you know, sneaker jokes and Mr. Rogers jokes and, you know, being typical sarcastic, snarky college students until Mr. Rogers walked into the studio, and then we all turned into 4-year-olds again.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah.
And honestly, I mean, I still remember so strongly meeting Mr. Rogers and how he looked me in the eye, gave me this firm handshake, started asking me questions about my experiences in college, really drawing me out into a conversation. You got the sense, the magic of what he did on television, he was able to do in person as well. He really engaged you personally. He drew you in to this conversation with him and drew you out. So we all had these really, and there's half a dozen college students in the studio along with the host, and we're all like little 4-year-olds again with Mr. Rogers telling these little stories about how we used to watch him, or in my case, didn't.
Yeah. You know? Did you tell him that?
I did. I told him that I watched Popeye in Japanese, and he thought, well, that must have been interesting. That's kind of, you know.
That's what he said.
That's kind of what he said. Yeah, that must have been interesting.
Yeah, well, there's a good Mr. Rogers impersonation. Yeah. Now, so did you? Is that your first story? Did you see him again and again? Because this was when you were in college. Were you working for PBS at that time?
I was working at the Tucson's PBS station, KUAT-TV, at the time. It was my first job in television.
Where did he originate from?
He originated out of Pittsburgh, the Pittsburgh PBS station.
Right.
It's WQED, I think. Yeah, WQED in Pittsburgh. And that's where that's where he started in public television. He actually started on Canadian television initially.
Did he really?
And had a show on Canadian television, which then, after a few years, migrated to public television at WQED in Pittsburgh. And that's where the rest of his career was spent there.
Just right there.
Yeah.
And I understand, like, kind of on a shoestring budget, they put all that together. That maybe not quite a shoestring. I don't know what shoestrings cost. But maybe it was a little bit more than that. But it was kind of, for all that he did, for all that he provided for generations, and then just the entertainment value of it alone and the educational value, they were able to put the show together with not a lot of financing.
Well, that's kind of the ethos of public television, particularly local public television stations. You know, we're always on very, very tight margins and always working on a shoestring budget. And Mr. Rogers was no different. But interestingly, I saw an interview with his wife recently who talked about that they never intended to get beyond that, because that's part of the magic. That's part of what worked, is that this was a very real situation. I mean, they were talking to audiences who didn't have a lot to work with either. So they felt that was part of the ethos that they wanted to bring to the show, is that you're going to make this a real home thing with real home things.
What was it like? So you were, do you know how long ago he passed away?
2003.
Mm-hmm. And you were in PBS by then.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Much.
And yeah, Mr. Rogers has been iconic within the PBS system and within PBS stations for a long time. He has been, at the very least, he would come up every year when, you know, funding cycles would come around, because Mr. Rogers was instrumental back in, I believe, is the late 60s or early 70s, when he testified in front of Congress, when funding for public television at that time was probably the first real threat to federal funding for public broadcasting. And Mr. Rogers gave a really impassioned 6-minute speech, which I still see on the internet today cropping up a few times a year, that just reminded Congress why this funding for public television was so important, why it was so instrumental in keeping local public television alive. And he literally, one man saved public television, and that was Mr. Rogers. So there are a lot of ways where he has impacted public television and public television audiences. But to me, at this point in my career, that was the most instrumental one. He didn't just, you know, create a safe haven for children. He created a safe haven for everybody in terms of the public media landscape.
Yeah, he really did. And that video that you talk about, you're right, it does kind of pop up every once in a while on like YouTube and stuff. And then I guess you just Google it and you'll find it there, because that is pretty remarkable. And you know that he did that, and you still hear that even to this day, don't you? That there's always a threat that the funding could be taken away. I've heard it before.
Oh, it's a threat that comes up every year, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, I think we should always question why we're spending the money we're spending and how we're spending the money. So it gives us an opportunity, frankly, to, you know, have a regular conversation with our viewers and with other people who don't watch us on why having this resource is important to American society and American viewers. So it's a good thing that we continually have to justify why we exist. And I will say that it's been particularly successful because we do enjoy very strong bipartisan support in Congress. So while it is not ignored when a presidential budget comes out, and by the way, President Trump is far from the first president to advocate for defunding public broadcasting. Most Republican presidents and some Democratic presidents have advocated reductions or cutting. So it's an opportunity for us to bring our case before the larger American public. We do it on air all the time with our pledge drives and with our viewers. But it's important that the people who don't watch us understand why it's important to have this as part of the media landscape. It's a really important base function that I think is necessary for a good society. And it's an opportunity to tell the public how we are different from how other countries in the world deal with public media, because most countries do have a version of it. Oh. And we're unique in how we approach it and how we fund it. And I'll frankly think that our system is the best.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not one of those. I earlier in my career, before I became savvy to all the machinations of it, I would be one of those who would have advocated eliminating federal funding, because I thought, you know, it's just too much of a too high a bar, and this constant, you know, use of resources to justify the funding is too much work. And I became to realize that it's that balance of funds where we get some from the federal government, and some states like New Mexico also help fund it, but mostly the funding comes from the public, and that diverse funding base is part of our strength. And the fact that we are required to constantly go to our viewers and to the general public and make our case makes us a much stronger institution.
I'm glad to hear you explain it that way. I mean, that really does just kind of, well, that's why you have the job you do, because you can actually just lay that all out there. I was a little bit nervous bringing it up because, you know, anything political, people just, you know, immediately sometimes run to their sides of the room. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you just kind of just went over that. So, and I'm so happy to hear that you find it useful to justify, you know, the funding. So, I mean, that's great. So thank you.
My pleasure, really. Happy to go on and on and on about this.
Yeah, and I'm happy to have you do that because you did it so well. Now, Anna, you are with the Special Projects Facilitator. You are the Special Projects Facilitator with APS Clothing Bank.
Yes.
And y'all will be the primary beneficiary of the big project that's going on this month,
yes,
right?
So we're very, very grateful for the opportunity, yes.
Oh, well, you know, and you guys help out so many people. So can you tell us, what does the Community Clothing Bank do? Oh,
absolutely. You know, through the generosity of our community, we serve APS students in need. We provide them with new socks, new underwear, a pair of shoes when we have those available, and with the vouchers, a hoodie, a light jacket, and yeah. Now, thanks to New Mexico PBS, a sweater that we are having for the drive, so we're really excited. We also have a great partnership with Goodwill, where they provide vouchers, and students can get 3 outfits 3 times a year. We have some wonderful support from our community, so we have some special projects that we also have. We have a supply barn where we can offer students the needed, you know, school supplies for so they can be ready to learn. We also have coats, a warm coat, with all our community partners. And now, with spring coming up and prom, we have a prom trunk show coming up.
Oh my gosh, we are getting close to that.
Yes,
right?
Yes. I believe our first trunk show is on Thursday. So it's really coming up, and it has allowed us the opportunity to provide outfits to students who otherwise cannot afford one and would like to attend a homecoming, a prom, or any kind of formal that we can provide for them. So it's really exciting. That all the things that we can do for them.
You guys do quite a lot of work. Now, what kind of items are needed?
It's you know, we're always right now. Shoes seem to be the big item that we need. New shoes is what we have at this time needed the most. But we're always in need of new underwear, new socks. It's really, we operate based on the community generosity. So we would like to serve as many students as we can. Last year, we served over 2,600. And just last semester, we served over 1,600. So
yeah, it's a lot of
very
folks.
Honorable.
Well, yes. I mean, it's honorable for you, and it's very helpful to the, you know, to the community. And like you mentioned, the number right there, quite a few folks, you can go through the clothing bank. And, you know, I was wondering if, like, families, adults, or is it just for the students?
It is mainly an APS student program. Okay. Yeah, so we hopefully help the families by helping their students get the necessary items they need. No, but as far as that goes, yes, it is APS students K-12 that we serve.
Now, the sweater drive has been going on since the 1st of March, and it continues to the 31st. Where are people dropping the sweaters off at?
Oh, yes. Go ahead.
Bank of the West locations here in Albuquerque, in the Albuquerque area. Bank of the West and Santa Fe is Del Norte Bank.
Del Norte Credit Union.
Del Norte Credit Union. I'm sorry, Del Norte. Del Norte Credit Union. Yeah, I don't blame you, you know. Del Norte Credit Union in Santa Fe. And I think it's interesting to note that the sweaters and outerwear garments that you donate in your community stay in your community. So those items that are donated here in the Albuquerque metropolitan area go to APS, and those items that are donated in Santa Fe go to the Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families. So, you know, when you make your donation, it is staying in your community. You are helping your community. So again, can't say enough about encouraging people to participate in this and get out there and find those items that you can donate and take the time to stop by one of these locations. You can also stop by KNME TV. There's a box in our lobby that I just dropped 6 sweaters into for some fairly large students, I hope, because I'm not a small guy.
I'm sure that, you know, like everybody that's going by, all shapes and all sizes right there for all of that stuff. And the iconic KNME building, I mean, that would just be fun. Right there off of University, right?
Right off University between Lomas and Indian School. But, you know, the Bank of the West locations are all over the place. There's a bunch of those. So
yes,
we are trying to make it easy
them.
For you.
Yes, 17. Absolutely. Yes, there's 17 locations.
Are they all doing it?
They were. Yes, every single one is doing it. And I know United Way, there's also a box over there. There's a box at City Center in Uptown.
Okay.
And one of our salons, Glow Salon on the West Side, has one too. So we have it spread around all over.
So you have it spread around so you can give all the, you know, spread it around even further.
Absolutely. Really.
You had a cute little story that I thought was kind of fun. It's the journey of a sweater.
Oh, yes, you know? Yes, yes. We were asked to, you know, to come up with the journey of a sweater. And our team, our clothing bank team, always thinks of the sweater as making the journey through its perspective, to the sweater's perspective. So we did a little kind of story how we imagine starting at the donor's closet, you know, just waiting to be worn and exciting, just thinking that maybe today's the day it's going to be worn. And a hand reaches in for the sweater, and yes, today we'll see the light of day, but no, it has been chosen for a different purpose. It gets to a dark brown maze, a little donation box, where it then is transported to our location. And actually, it thinks, you know, with every swaying motion as to what's going to happen with me. Then suddenly it stops, finds itself splashing around water with the suds because we get to clean everything that we get. So it's really kind of exciting that we are able to do that. So we have this really a brown, you know, dark brown maze, a little shower in distress, and now it gets into our warm feeling of the dryer because we get everything a process. And as it waits to be sorted, you know, we get into our sorted houses. We have, would it end up in the boys and the girls and the men's or the women's? It doesn't know where it will end up. So we just think of it as having this journey through starting with the, you know, at the beginning with the closet and ending. And just as it gets to our student, it would just say, I remember this from before, waiting on a shelf for a new home. Into a bag, I go to my final stop. I feel hope as the hand reaches for me. And then finally, it's in the right place that it longed to be. And I am no longer just a sweater, but a message of love that is wrapping our student with the generosity of support of our community. So our team really views this journey of a sweater that way, just wrapping the love of our community with our students. And we could not take this journey without our community. And I will try not to cry because it's always very emotional for
me.
I
can see you're getting emotional. And I think it's great. I mean, you know, it's showing that the community can come together and really help. And the sweater, I love that.
It just really, really is very touching from the community because we get to see really all the good that the community has for us. And we get to see the beginning and the end, how grateful our students are when they receive this care package from the community through their clothing bank.
Well, I like how that story ends with that very thing. You know, talking about how that sweater becomes, you know, kind of like, how do you say it in there?
It's a message of love.
A message
really
of love.
From our community. I think that's how we see it.
And
it's more than just a sweater. It's more than just an outerwear. It's more than just the item that is donated. It is really more of that love, a message that somebody cares out there. And, you know, we'll share some stories of some of our students that you will see how that is really, really impactful. So thank you to the community.
Thank you. You know, thanks to the community, because, I mean, there's a lot of folks in this community that need the help, you know. And I talked to students from APS that, you know, they've utilized the clothing banks.
Yes.
And it's been very needed because, you know, these kids, I mean, sometimes image is everything, right?
It is. It is. You know, I started this job in May, and as I mentioned, is very honorable. But one of the statistics that I learned that was very, very staggering for me is that 1 in 4 of our students live in poverty. You know, mm-hmm. 1 in 4 are in need. And to me, that was, wow, it was very eye-opening.
It is eye-opening when you think about that. And you find out that, you know, one of the things that's kind of eye-opening, I've had other conversations with folks that work with the students here. Just in Albuquerque alone, there's a very high homeless population with students. They're leaving their
yes.
schools and they're headed on home, and home is a car or it's a friend's couch. You know, it's just kind of, so there's a lot of need in our community that we don't necessarily see. And maybe perhaps we don't necessarily, maybe we're not supposed to. But what we do see are the opportunities to help, because you folks see, you know,
yes.
quite a lot, especially you, Anna, with the clothing bank and the work that you do in there.
Yes, and thank you for mentioning, we do work closely with Title I Homeless Project.
Oh.
They are also within our little area where we are, and we try to serve them as fast as we can, because you're right that the numbers are amazing and just
higher than you thought it would be, and much higher than it ever should be, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's cool too, the whole thing with Mr. Rogers. I mean, that's sort of almost his thing, right? That he always wanted everybody to feel loved, supported, part of the family. Part of the neighborhood. So the special, Franz, that you were mentioning, that's getting closer to airing again later on this morning, is that the It's You I Like?
That's correct. That's Mr. Rogers, It's You I Like. And yeah, again, it airs later this morning, 10:30 a.m. on Channel 5.1. And it is kind of the definitive story. Well, I shouldn't say that, because there's so many definitive stories apparently about Mr. Rogers, but it's yet another great story to tell about Mr. Rogers and the amazing impact he had really across the board on children and American society. I mean, he set a bar for children's programming that I have to say I feel like, you know, we've fallen down over the past 10 or 15 years, I think. We've kind of fallen down as a society and realizing the impact that media has on children. And I think we're starting to see, you know, some of the negative outcomes that come out of that. And I think there's a time to really refocus that. You know, there's another connection to this community with Mr. Rogers, and that is a dear friend of mine is a professor emeritus at UNM in developmental psychology. And she spent her career studying the effects of media on children. And she was one of the instrumental researchers in her time, Dr. Lynette Kofer, for studying the impact of media on children. She went into this because as a young grad student with children, a young mother with children in grad school, getting her PhD, she was kind of struggling to find a direction, and she started watching her children watching Mr. Rogers, and that is what determined the path of her life and set her in motion to become really a nationally renowned a psychologist in this field and the impact of media on children. And she and other researchers like her, primarily women, were really instrumental in crafting the first policy, national policy, both through FCC regulation and law, in how media needed to be handled around children's programming. So I can tell you that Lynette, who did a lot of her work with Mr. Rogers, worked with Fred directly in Pittsburgh, doing a lot of research with him. In fact, we've got some archival tape. We're still trying to find the kind of machine that plays it so we can see, because apparently there is some stuff in there with Mr. Rogers working with kids off camera and with Lynette. So we're still trying to figure out how to get that stuff laid out. So,
oh my goodness, what is it that you're like? Can you like shout it out? And if there's anybody listening that would maybe know, or have
it is an old, and I, well, we're trying to find out what the actual model and brand of the machine was, but it was a half inch reel to reel black and white video.
All right.
So we're talking circa probably late 60s, early 70s.
And you're a TV station. I mean, you've got those connectors there.
Hey, look, I remember those decks. I remember actually shooting on that stuff, but I cannot find one, and we've been looking. But if anybody has one, anybody knows, you know, feel free to contact me through New Mexico PBS. I'd really be interested in seeing if we can figure out a way to see some of this footage and see what's really there. But really, Lynette and another impact that Mr. Rogers had was really on really shaping how television should be dealing with programming around children. And that's why he started what he started. He started in this because, as a young man, he saw the impact that a lot of children's programming was having on kids, and he thought that there was a better way to do it. So he actually launched this very low-budget, simple show. As an adult, you look at it, and you might kind of squint your eyes a little bit. But the fact is that you watch your kids watching this show, and it does have an amazing and transformative impact on them. And it does create a safe haven for kids. And that is an ethos which public television carries to this day. And that is directly related to Mr. Rogers' influence on television. So, I mean, his spirit is still well alive and living in public television. And beyond that, we see, you know, other broadcasters who still embrace some of that ethos and still try to maintain a level of positiveness, of kindness in the messages that they're trying to send out to kids. So, you know, again, Mr. Rogers, it's not surprising to me that he's making this resurgence, this comeback, because the impact that he's had on kids, and I think particularly now when we're stressed as a society, people are seeking that out. You know, he had this famous, yet another famous Fred Rogers, I won't quote him because I will get it wrong, but essentially his message was, you know, when their times are hard and things are bad, look for the helpers. You will always find a helper. And that's still true today.
Yes.
You look out there, and as bad as things may seem and as hard as things may look, you will find helpers. And I'm sitting next to one of them.
You are a helper. You absolutely are a helper. And you know, Franz, I mean, we all watch the news, and we have seen these terrible things that have happened and happen again and again. And that is something that people started saying a few years ago. And I can't quite remember exactly which, you know, when it was just a few years ago where people started on social media, you started seeing that meme pop up of Mr. Rogers and look for the helpers. And that's sometimes that's the only thing you can remember, I would think, in a situation like that where, you know, it's just everything is going crazy. What do you do? What do you do? Where do you go? You just look for the helpers, you know.
Well,
it's all you can remember to do. Yes.
It's an important thing to remember because it is, I mean, it is the nature of news. And I'm not going to criticize because, I mean, we all look to the news to find out what's going on, and oftentimes they're bad things. And it's as much as people talk about, you know, only, you know, we should report more good stories. The fact is that I think it says something about society that, frankly, we expect good, so bad is news. I mean, I think there's something to that, you know, so we expect good. But the fact is every time you look at one of these dire situations, there is a helper there.
Absolutely.
There is somebody who was doing something positive and productive in that situation. And I think it's always important to look for that and remember that. So Mr. Rogers' statement was really to children, but it is something that we should all embrace and we should all remember that every time you see a bad news story, you look at that story and you'll find somebody in there who was doing good.
Yeah.
Doing, somewhere in
true.
There.
It is a great point. Very true. We could all just try that out later tonight. Now, we only got a couple more minutes left, so let's just touch on where folks can go to drop off the sweaters and any other items that you may be needing, not only for this drive, but also just for the APS Clothing Bank. And everything donated stays here in our communities.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. You know, we are, I wanted to share just maybe a couple of stories. We have time for that, it will be maybe one. It'll be quick because I know you said it was fast. So, but I just wanted to share a story in this instance where attendance, our students were having some kind of attendance concerns, and throughout talking to them as to what was happening, one of the students was coming in with holes in the clothes and holes in the shoes. So we were able to provide them with some of the, you know, the failing grades were happening as well. Because it's all correlated.
It ties in.
Exactly. So what a wonderful time when they refer the student to the clothing bank, we were able to provide the student with all the resources that we had, and the family was very thankful. Consequently, the grades increased. The student was able to make honor roll and have perfect attendance. So I wanted to share that quickly with you and the viewers just to show you how about that educational connection that also happens with showing somebody that we care, that we were helping them to just put a little piece in their life a little bit better.
I believe it. It ties in. You know, they feel good when they get to school, or they feel bad, and that is going to set their entire day. And, you know, they're going to delve into those studies if they feel good, and they're going to try to find some escape if they don't. And it may not be the textbook at all.
Yeah, so that's just what they do. But thank you for, far as for us, our phone number is 248-187. Mm-hmm. 43. Again, that's 248-1843. You can also search our website at aps.edu/community/clothing-bank. Or if you just search for APS Clothing Bank, we pop up right away. So you don't have to memorize the website.
I know. That Google machine, it is just absolutely a great thing.
Exactly. So APS Clothing Bank. And yes, please, if you we want the sweaters, so we can take care of our students. And if I can close with the quote from Mr. Rogers, if we have time, from our beloved Mr. Rogers. And this one makes me choke a little bit, so I will do my best. So he said, "We live in a world in which we need to share responsibility. It's easy to say, it's not my child, not my community, not my world, not my problem. Then there are those who see the need and respond. I consider those people my heroes." So thank you to New Mexico PBS, to iHeartMedia, all our community partners, our volunteers, and our New Mexico community for being heroes to our students. So
all the helpers and the heroes.
Yes,
and
we are forever grateful.
Yeah, for bringing all of us together. Remember, you can drop off the sweaters to the end of the month at Bank of the West locations here in Albuquerque or Del Norte Credit Unions up in Santa Fe. Franz and Anna, thank you guys so much.
Oh, thank you, Donnie. Thank pleasure.
You. Oh, bless you. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We'll see you again next weekend.